Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the GovCon world, this podcast is for you. Today we're talking about why the lowest price often wins a government competition, whether it should or not. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Check out the end of the episode for more info, or just go to skywaymember.com. All right, let's get started with why low price wins. It's not as obvious as it sounds. We're back to talking about price on the podcast, and specifically, why does low price win?
Seems like a simple question, right?
Yeah, obviously.
It's like a low price wins because when you're shopping, you're going to pay a lower price. When you're shopping on Amazon for things that are price sensitive, like yoga blocks, right? They range from like 10 to 20 bucks, but I can't really tell the difference. They're made out of different materials and functionally speaking, they're foam blocks, right?
Yeah.
So 10 to 20 bucks, done. A rollerball pen, 0.05 millimeter, what's it, like microfine or whatever that's called. It's around a buck. So I'm just going to click on one of those on Amazon. It's not, the low price is going to win in that scenario. And then sunflower seeds, a bizarre example, is I bought so many sunflower seeds when I ran a youth baseball park, because people buy them by the ton, it felt like. But anyway, they're between 17 cents and 30 cents per ounce. I have no idea what the difference between a 30 cent sunflower seed versus a 17 cent sunflower seed. So price won. You ended up with a low price. So in other words, all things being equal, low price we can understand. We're going to go with low price. And so that makes it an easy answer. Well, this is GovCon, so it's never going to be that easy.
Before we talk about when this low price thing doesn't work, when it's not easy, let's stop and say thanks.
Thanks this week goes to Kimberly Yates. Kimberly is a retired GSA contracting officer, and she's an active participant in our LinkedIn and Facebook groups. I want to thank Kimberly for writing some great remarks about our podcast and then sharing them with her connections on LinkedIn. The best way for people to find this information that we're giving away for free is for people like Kimberly to share it, our episodes on with her network on LinkedIn and elsewhere.
Thanks, Kimberly. All right, let's get back to low prices, realistic prices, and why we as human beings default to low price. Why does lowest price win? We don't want to go too much into background on all of the different pricing analysis techniques and how price is considered in source selections. We want to keep this under 30 minutes. We're just going to talk about lowest price in terms of FAR Part 15, the negotiated acquisitions, competitions. The rules are a bit different if you're dealing with micro purchases, simplified acquisition procedures, GSA schedules, multiple award contracts. Sealed bid is a little different too.
And by the way, we have episodes for each one of those topics. It's 301, 209, 220, 221, and 39, respectively.
That's kind of what I was saying. We've covered these kind of things many times. We've taken a little bit different angle at it this time. Anyway, under all those approaches, the concepts that we're going to talk about here they still pretty much apply in the same way. You can think about lowest price winning in two kind of different ways.
There's a definitive low price where the government says, and by the way, definitive low price is not an actual FAR term, but that's lowest price technically acceptable, where the government states upfront, the lowest price will be the deciding factor once you've met the technical baseline.
Yeah. If you can get above the bar of this is okay performance, and you have the lowest price, you win. The other one is sort of, what'd you say, definitive lowest price? So the other is not definitive, indefinitive low price, right?
Those are probably the confusing terms.
Yeah, again, not a FAR term here. But the opposite of definitive low price is the trade-off. The government states upfront that price is not the only deciding factor. We're also going to look at technical approach, past performance, certifications, your schedule, those kind of things, and then make a decision whether or not it's worth paying a little more in dollars for a little better product or service, better in terms that we've defined for this source selection. When we say definitive low price, I think you already used the term low price technically acceptable, LPTA. That's the ultimate in low price selection. It's actually lowest price technically acceptable. So the government uses this when they're buying things like ballpoint pens is a great option, although you wouldn't go to all the trouble for a source selection to buy pens. But the performance is all pretty much the same. As long as there's enough ink to last a couple days or however long a ballpoint pen usually lasts, and as long as it actually writes, whether it costs 99 cents or a dollar really doesn't matter. So you buy the 99 cent one. You're not going to get any more by paying a dollar.
We cover this in episode 208, is called LPTA. And because we have to have some FAR time here, this is all detailed in FAR 15101-2. And in paragraph B talks about when you're using LPTA, the following applies. There's a list of stuff. We're pulling out the highlights here. Is including the evaluation factors and significant subfactors that determine acceptability in the solicitation. And what's that acceptable? Like you said, you just good enough, right? And then the solicitation, it has to specify that the selection will be made on the basis of lowest evaluated price of proposals meeting or exceeding the acceptable standards for non-cost factors. In other words, just meet the bar, and then after, we're going to go low price. And it specifically says, and it's a good way to segue into the next topic, specifically says trade-offs are not permitted. So in other words, if you find the whiz-bang solution, but you said you're going to go with lowest price, you can't take the whiz-bang solution. You got to go with low price.
You're telling people bid low. That's how you win.
Correct.
The other side of that, the indefinitive, I don't even know if that's a word, but that's what you type. So that's what I'm saying this time.
You'll read anything.
The other than low price, the trade-off process, that's in FAR 15101-1. It says the trade-off is appropriate when it's in the government's best interest to consider awarding to other than the lowest price offer or other than the highest technically rated offer. So there's an or there, and that's a double-edged sword. So it may lead to you paying a little more than the lowest price, but it also may mean that having the top-rated proposal doesn't win it for you if your price is higher than the lowest price. And so that's where it gets complicated, right? When you're using a trade-off process, the government, this is right out of the FAR, the government has to explain the evaluation factors. It says all evaluation factors and significant sum factors that will affect contract award and their relative importance shall be clearly stated in the solicitation. So up front, you have to be able to define, these are the things that I'm going to evaluate. I'm not going to consider anything else. And this one is more important than that one. Wow, that's hard to do.
The solicitation also has to state the relationship to price. So in other words, it'll say things like solicitation shall state whether all evaluation factors other than cost or price, when combined, are significantly more important, equal to, or less important than cost. And so everything has to be related to cost or price.
Yeah.
And you can trade off, but you got to tell everybody price is the most important thing. Price is the least important thing. It's equal to the other stuff. Just building that house of cards is what it feels like when you're writing the source selection plan. That alone can be difficult.
Yeah, they're trying to get it out of a scoring formula kind of thing where each point in the technical evaluation criteria, each point in the scale is worth 1.3 in the price scale or something. They're trying to stay out of that kind of thing. So all you get is significantly more important, slightly more important, kind of equal. It's a guesstimate to tell you, right? It's a guesstimate to tell you what the government thinks is most important, but they don't want to get down to telling you exactly because then it just comes down to math and it wrecks their ability to actually do a trade-off, right? Because then it might as well be like the lowest price. You just do the math and okay, that's the number that came out. That's the one I have to select. The government wants to create some semblance of choice where they can say, this is the one I really want and this is why.
So in the end, the trade-off process allows award to other than the lowest price. However, yeah. It's not always that easy.
Even though you're allowed to award to other than lowest price, it can be difficult. The FAR throws up a couple roadblocks that make awarding to other than the lowest price more difficult. You always talk about the path of least resistance, Kevin. That's the route that people want to go, right? They don't want to do more work than necessary, or they don't have time to do more work than necessary. FAR 15.101-1, which is where we've been living here, subparagraph C, says the trade-off process permits trade-off amongst cost or price and other non-cost factors and allows the government to accept other than the lowest price proposal. Pause. The perceived benefit, the perceived benefits of the higher price proposal shall merit the additional cost, and the rationale for the trade-offs must be documented in the file in accordance with FAR 15.406, which is titled documentation.
Yeah, there's an entire section of 15.4 is source selections, and there's an entire paragraph called documentation. So yes, it's kind of exciting that this is no longer the path of least resistance.
Yeah, that's work.
If you went with lowest price, it's a no-brainer. Whereas if you say, no, this is a higher price, there's a whole section that says you shall document it, and it's not going to be two sentences. It's going to be, you know, a process.
Yeah, you have to give your rationale, and that has to stand up to scrutiny.
Correct. Because the company that loses, who is the lowest price, they're going to argue at the debriefing, and they may even protest. And so whatever you say as to why you paid more for company X instead of company Y, you have the mindset of it's going to end up, you know, in some lawyer's hands. So yeah. I have to document it well.
Yeah, you have to write it with that in mind. Hopefully it doesn't, but you, if you don't have enough rationale to actually make that decision, then you shouldn't have made the decision in the first place, right? You should be able to document it. But it takes time and energy, and it puts you up to scrutiny. All right, let's pause and position this in the acquisition and execution time zones. When does this happen in the government's acquisition process? It starts in the market research zone. This is where the government is deciding, do I just want to think about this like ballpoint pens? Are there any factors in what I'm buying where better actually helps me? Am I going to tell the difference between the less expensive sunflower seeds and the more expensive sunflower seeds? If I can define that at what is better, maybe I want to consider something other than evaluation criteria that lead me to only being able to select the lowest price. This is where industry folks have to get into the process and help the government understand. Again, government contracting officers are buying lots of different things. They may not have the expertise in everything they're buying to know whether or not it matters, whether or not the price matters in sunflower seeds. Right? They may not be sunflower seed experts, but they need to have access to it or have industry. The sunflower seed growers and sellers need to explain to the government, this is why paying more is better. Right, and through that process, it gets documented in the RFP during the RFP zone, and then a selection is made during the source selection zone. And whether you're talking something major or just a micro purchase like sunflower seeds, someone's still making a decision to buy from this vendor.
And during the market research zone is where it's important that industry explains the risk to the government of going with a lower price. Like we just talked about, this is why it needs to cost more. This is the benefit you're going to get, but also here's the risk. Of if you go below a certain price, this is the risk that's going to show up.
Yeah.
The market research zone is when to have that conversation.
In the execution time zones after a contract award, this plays out. You find out whether the price was too low, whether the contractor can actually perform or deliver during the performance zone. And during the recompete zone, if you're buying more, if you're doing another competition after this, that's when you reassess whether or not the strategy you used worked out for you.
If you're not familiar with the acquisition time zones, we cover those in episode number 3, and the execution time zones are in episode 84.
It's important for everyone to consider price, and I think you just sort of mentioned, Kevin, the price floor. Like at what level is the price too low to actually deliver?
When the requirement's not clear, mostly. That's when low price is usually going to win. When we don't understand the difference, again, we're picking on the sunflower seeds. If we don't understand the difference between a 30-cent sunflower seed and a 17-cent sunflower seed, we're going to pick the 17-cent sunflower seed. Now, let's assume for a minute that 17-cent sunflower seeds have lower quality. They're the manufacturers have less experience, and maybe they taste longer to get them.
Or maybe they're the ones that have been on the shelf for a year and a half.
There, I hadn't thought about that.
They're all stale.
Yeah, that's a great example. I don't have context on why it's more expensive. That's the part that's missing, is when you don't understand the context of why would it cost more. Because all things being equal or perceived to be equal, that's the real challenge here. Low price is going to be the default. It's a good business sense if everything's equal to pay a lower price. But the problem is if you don't understand why things aren't equal, you can't document that in this source selection plan.
One of our regular examples for why you might want to pay more, we use the baby stroller example a lot, right? You can buy the lowest priced stroller to push your baby around in, or you can buy one that costs 10 times as much and has every bell and whistle in the world. That's your choice. Most people settle for somewhere in between, right? They don't want to put their child in the stroller built by the lowest bidder, much like, you know, astronauts don't want to be launched on the rocket built by the lowest bidder. Another place where it shows up a lot is in services. And for services, a lot of times we use like building a deck on your house, right? Do you always select the lowest bidder? What if they don't have a license? Or what if they've never built a deck, but they're just guessing at the price and they think they can build it for less than everybody else? Do you want them doing it? Well, not if you're going to stand on it or to have your kids out there playing on it, right? You might pay a little bit more for someone with more experience building a deck. And that plays out in government services contracts as well. If you have needs for specialized services and it's important enough that you have to contract out to get that support, do you want to pay for the lowest price, or would maybe paying a little more get you something better? That's something that you have to decide, and something that is very difficult to write into a source selection plan, into evaluation criteria. It's hard to explain what better is.
One of the things that makes it difficult, particularly in services, is this issue of, if I say I need this service, you might be able to do a, like, I don't know, cleaning services or you know, building a deck. There might be some technology that makes the result of the services cheaper, maybe, right? That might be a reason that the price appears unreasonable. However, if the approach is I need to hire five people that do this particular skill, if the price comes in significantly lower there, you can't lower the price of people until there's a price for it. When you're going to get to a bottom where you're not going to be able to hire. And that's one of the things that when we say services, there's services where you're actually getting a result, like cleaning services, whether they use two people or 50 people, I want the result. Sometimes in government contracts, and particularly in cleared positions and stuff, we need five people. That's not the same thing. Being able to say lowest price on those five people, the floor is a lot easier to see because you know what those people cost. And so this nuance gets really difficult to write into a source selection plan.
Yeah, the floor isn't minimum wage, which is like legally the minimum you can pay for people. It's you got to be realistic about what the market will bear, right? I've used cleared software developers a million times as the example, but people with top secret security clearances who are software developers that can work on classified programs come at a premium. You can say, I'm only going to pay minimum wage, low price for this. We're going to pay in the minimum that the law allows us to pay. You're not going to get candidates that have the requisite clearances or the experience to do the job that you need done. It's just not going to happen. You're competing with the rest of the market out there.
On the government side, the assumption was that the requirement was clear. I wrote a great RFP, right? And to me, all that's left is to choose on price. That I made that mistake multiple times as a contracting officer. And think about how often do we do this in our own lives? Like with the sunflower seeds. I don't know that the 17 cent ones, like you said, they've been sitting on the shelf for a year and a half. I don't know, right? And so my assumption is that I can just go with lowest price. That's why the trade-off can be harder, because the value of price is easily quantifiable. I know that $5 or $500,000 is less than $550,000. That's easy. Things like quality, past performance, all the things you listed earlier in this episode about certifications, those aren't as easy to quantify. And that's why one of the reasons as a contracting officer, if I don't understand the difference, I don't have a way through the source selection to differentiate between price, if it hasn't written into the plan to be able to say this is better than that based on the technical understanding of the requirement, I'm going to go with lowest price. In addition, and I guess unfortunately, like we talked about a few minutes ago, lowest price is not the path of least resistance, because I got to be able to defend my position of why we're paying more. And I can't come up with that as a contracting officer. I'm not the technical expert. Like you said, contracting officers buy lots of different stuff. For me to be able to say why this, here's one, a welder There are welders that make $100,000 a year. There are welders that make more than that. But if they're working in Alaska on the Alaskan pipeline and they're welding over their heads in sub-zero temperatures, those guys make real money. Context, right? Yeah. Actually,
I love that you use welders. That was a pain point earlier in your career. And it comes back to welders a lot of times. Yeah,
it's a specialized skill.
It's hard for the government to recognize where the price floor is for those kind of things, right? If you're buying products, if you're buying either commodities or custom built products, it's easier to recognize that when you do the math of all the parts and all the hours it takes to build it, no company could build it for less than this until a revolutionary technology comes along and changes the game, and then the price floor drops. That happens. For people, it's a different story. And there's a lot of information out there about not what the government is paying, but what the market is paying for these types of skills. And unfortunately, sometimes the government falls for thinking that they can hire services for less than the general market is paying. And that, it just doesn't work. Yes, you can award a contract, but you're not going to get what you think you're going to get if you're offering a price lower than the commercial market will pay for those same kind of services.
One of the ways the government can actually plan for that is through an independent government cost estimate, which we're going to do a separate episode about. But that's where this research is being done. And it's hard to be able to bring an industry's perspective and get, like you said, those market prices if the government is only looking, and I've done it wrong, I'm only looking at, oh, well, last time we did it for this much, and the other government contracts do it for this much. We have to be able to look at the whole market, and that is not easy to do.
Yeah, and independent government cost estimate, that's usually a big deal. Like, how much should it cost to build an aircraft carrier, right? If you're just buying software developers, there are lots of other resources out there to help you understand what the market prices are for those kind of skills. You don't want to pay more than market, but you don't want to pay significant, or you don't want to think that you can pay significantly lower than market rate for those skills. Industry folks pay attention to this in exquisite detail, right? Price matters. For government folks, they're just looking at, do I have the budget to do this, right? So if I can get more within my budget, that's great. But industry is looking at it as, can I afford to deliver this and actually make money? Because if we don't make money, we are not going to survive. There are loss leader products, right? There are times when industry will offer you something for less than cost to get you to buy a couple, but because they know in the long run they'll make it up. And that's true with people too. Sometimes they'll offer a few people where they're losing money every time that person works an hour, but on the overall contract, they're doing okay. But that is not a sustainable strategy.
Consider the airlines right now with, you know, the COVID, with the worldwide pandemic, right? The airlines are being asked to leave the middle seat open in order to slow the spread. Well, functionally, if they leave that middle seat open, they're losing money on the flight. Right. I mean, I've talked before, but I think we talked about in the Perfect Competition episode, the airlines are so competitively priced out. They make like 1% on each flight, right? So they take all those seats out, they're losing money. And so businesses, just like the government, they can't operate at a loss indefinitely. And while it seems like the right thing to do, they're not a public utility. They can't just keep doing that. And so that's, again, as a contracting officer inside the bubble, not looking up at the overall market, again, raising my hand, I did that a couple of times, that it's easy to lose track of that and go, huh, yeah, that's why they're telling me they can do it for this when they can't.
First, companies start cutting corners to try to do things at a lower price to save money. Then safety becomes a concern. That's a big deal with airlines. But it's the same for everything you do, right? Lowest price is not always the best path. And unfortunately, the way the FAR lays out the acquisition process and the evaluation process, it's difficult for the government to evaluate on other than, well, this is the lowest price we're going to award here. All right, Kevin, let's try to wrap this one up.
All things being equal, price is the default. And so government and industry have to both be able to see why all things are not equal. Why a 30-cent sunflower seed is different. I'm going to go back to that. Or a better example, why a welder can cost $40,000 a year in one state and $200,000 a year in another state, in another situation.
And if you don't understand that difference, and you think you can pay $40,000 when the going rate for welders is $200,000, you're either not going to get the service that you need, or you're going to get someone that is not qualified for the to make $200,000. Otherwise, they would be doing it, and they wouldn't sell their services to you for $40,000.
Yeah, the risk is that that low price will keep winning. If we don't fix this pattern, and again, the reason I'm raising my hand is a couple of contracts that I had that our IGCE, our estimate, was based on what it cost last time. And what if what it cost last time was too low? What if there was a price floor, right, that we were already under? And as it turned out, that wasn't the case because the economy was rough at the time. So people were willing to do it for a lower price. That isn't the case right now. Okay. So as a contracting officer, if I keep doing that, I'm going to end up having to do the contracts twice. Did that once also.
Yeah.
And here's the other problem. Industry is going to find new customers to serve. It's one of the things I never saw as a contracting officer is that the overall economy is huge. Okay. Well, let's talk about just the government market's huge. There are lots of customers, particularly if you have a skill that lots of agencies need. There's a point, and we have a couple, full disclosure, we have a couple agencies that we don't recommend that our customers serve because of this problem. Is after a while, you're like, you know what? I can't just keep hitting my head against the wall. So industry will find new customers. That is the risk to the government customer, to the mission, that companies will opt out of bidding on contracts.
Right. Some agencies write clear requirements and clear evaluation criteria that say, that signal to industry that, hey, we don't want the lowest price. We want these other factors are more important. And then they award to the lowest price. Right. That happens once. The next time those type of evaluation criteria come out, industry reads that and says, ha ha, I'm not falling for that again. I lost because they selected low price despite what this said. So everybody just bids low price again, right? So even though your RFP says one thing, your behavior in how you selected the awardee has a huge impact on future responses.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was doing that.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Another factor is the value of a clear requirement and clear evaluation criteria. Like the evaluators can show how to consider more than price. That was one of the big things that makes a difference is have factors that the evaluators who aren't contracting officers, these are the users, can say, this is why we should pay more for this. This is why this is an unrealistic price because of the following six reasons. There needs to be room in the evaluation criteria for that kind of thinking. Because again, we're back to the thinking job.
Yeah. The RFP has to clearly show the offerors how you're going to consider factors other than price. They need to know how to bid. Low price, better performance, what do you really want? The evaluators have to know how to consider that when they're writing their evaluations. And the decider has to understand how to justify the value of the other factors over low price. Otherwise, everyone just defaults to low price, the offerors, the evaluators, the decider, and you end up with the 17-cent stale sunflower seeds, right?
Sorry, sunflower seeds are great. And just so we're clear on this, this is easier said than done.
Yeah.
I mean, price is so easily quantifiable that things like experience, efficiency, quality, they're not as easy to quantify. And that's what makes this hard, especially in service contracts. But it's worth the time up front because otherwise you end up, raising my hand, you end up having to do it twice.
Yeah.
Having to T for C somebody and do it over because you don't see this coming is frustrating to say the least. And it impacts the mission. I mean, the point of all the stuff we talk about is for contracts to deliver and support a mission. Well, if you're not able to find the people to do the work, mission's getting impacted.
Yeah. Don't take this as knocking on anybody involved in the process. We understand how difficult it is. If you're going low price, straightforward, easy. If you're doing anything other than low price, put in the time and energy to define it, how it's going to work. Put in the time and energy to communicate that to industry so that they understand. Industry, put in the time and energy to help the government understand whether or not that's actually going to work or not. Because if you don't put in that time and energy, you might as well have just saved it all and gone with low price because that's where you're going to end up.
There you
and
go.
And that's a good place to end up. All right.
There you go.
Talk to you later.
All right, I'll see you, Paul.
There we are with another episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. This episode is brought to you, as always, by Skyway Acquisition. Skyway's team of contracting officers can help you decipher those confusing RFP instructions about price. Join the Skyway community to discuss in the Ask a Contracting Officer forum and get discounted rates on custom consulting from Skyway's team of contracting officers. To learn more, go to skywaymember.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.